by the Pledge of Allegiance.
In the sixth chapter of Micah, we hear, He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Almighty God, you have required us to make sure justice is practiced in our land, and to do all we are capable to assure our people the right to seek protection under the law. So guide us to understand what is needed, and that all our bills are the best suited to fulfill your will. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kavanaugh, Kehoe, Krause, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schoff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from 7th, Senator from 10th, Senator from the 11th, Senator from St. Francois, Senator from the 1st. A quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular sessions.
Senator from St. Charles, 23rd.
Mr. President, I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been
you
fully read.
You have heard the motion. As many as are the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today we have the dental hygienist students and faculty from Missouri Southern State University. It's around 60 young men and women that's going to be coming in. Some are up in the Senate gallery now. I'd like for the body to make them feel welcome.
Will the guests of the senator from Newton please rise for recognition by the Missouri Senate?
Further introduction of guests. Senator from the 5th.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. To my left and to your right, I have Ms. Ashley Cook, who is my intern this year. She's a native of Kansas City. She's a graduating senior from Lincoln University. She's majoring in English, and she would like to become a writer as she moves down her professional trail. Would the Senate please give her a warm welcome?
Would the guests of the Senator from the 5th please stand and be recognized? Welcome. Further introduction of guests, Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Here today with us all the way from Chicago is Ronald McDonald. He's up up on the dais today, and I'd like everybody to make him feel welcome.
Applause is not necessary. Senator from Cole, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce Matt Alsager. He's here today with the Missouri Soybean Association from Jefferson City. He'll be job shadowing Senator Mayer today, and I'd like the Senate to make him feel welcome.
Would the guests of the Senate from Cole please stand and be recognized? Thank you for coming. Further introduction of guests. Okay. Senator from Green.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to introduce to the body Dr. Jim Wolf, who is here from Springfield today, serving as the physician of the day. He's practiced medicine for 34 years in Springfield and braved the elements this morning to come up and to serve our body. I would ask that our members make him welcome. And I also have several guests in the upper gallery with me today. Summer Iberg, Jessica Solberg, Rebecca Block, and Haley Haley Watson, who are with the Friends of Missouri Midwives. And all of these guests have already visited in my office. It's been a good morning. Thank you, Mr. President.
Great. Would the guests of the senator from Green please stand and be recognized? Let's give them a round of applause. Thanks for coming. Senator from the 8th.
Mr. Speaker, introduce special...
Proceed.
Mr. President, correction. Sorry, I have several educators from Eastern Jackson County here, Michelle Miller, Carol Kelly, and Annette Phillips, if they would rise and if the body would help us make them feel welcome. And I think there's several other people with them that I don't have their names. So if they would rise, we could help them feel welcome. I would appreciate it.
Would all the guests of the senator from the 8th please stand and be recognized? Thanks for coming. Further introduction of guests. The chair would like to recognize two guests that I have from Nevada YMCA, Matt Schmeringer and Scott Summer. If they would please stand and be recognized, thank you for coming. Let's welcome them to the Senate chamber. Senator from the 10th, introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have three very special guests to introduce today. From the YMCA, we have David Byrd, Dave Thomas, and Kevin Hornbeck. Kevin is the governor-elect from Youth and Government. Please make them welcome.
Would the guests from the senator from the 10th please stand and be recognized? Okay. Let's welcome them. Senator from the 13th.
Special guest.
Proceed.
To my left, I'd like to introduce Brenda Shields, our former pro tem's better half, is visiting us today, and as someone who served with him for over 20 years, I felt obliged to make this introduction. I hope the chamber welcomes her much more now that she's up here by herself.
Please stand and be recognized. Further introduction of guests. Further introductions. Petitions, memorials, and remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have three bills.
Send them forward, please.
Further explanation, Mr. President.
Madam Secretary, please read the bills.
Senate Bill 235, introduced by Senator Schaefer, an act relating to certain provider taxes. Senate Bill 236, introduced by Senator Schaefer, an act relating to pharmacy services. Senate Bill 237, introduced by Senator Schaefer, an act relating to standards for representation of children by guardians ad litem.
Introduction of bills. Senator from the 15th, send it forward, please. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 238, introduced by Senator Schmidt et al., an act relating to diseases presumed incurred in the line of duty by firefighters.
Would you care to explain the bill?
No further explanation.
Introduction of bill. Senator from the 10th.
Mr. President, I have two bills today.
Please send them forward. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill 239, introduced by Senator Justice et al., an act relating to human rights.
Would you care to explain that bill?
Mr. President, I don't need to explain my bill, but I have changed my rankings. Thank you.
Senator from... I'm sorry. Madam Secretary, please read the next bill.
Senate Bill 240, introduced by Senator Justice et al., an act relating to school safety.
Would you care to explain the bill? Okay. Further introduction of bills, Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I have a bill.
Please send it forward.
Bill is self-explanatory.
Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Senate Bill 241, introduced by Senator Brown and Senator Wasson, an act relating to sales tax exemptions for captive wildlife.
Further introductions of bills? Senator from the 7th.
I know, even with red, it's hard to see me, isn't it? I have two bills to introduce.
Please send them forward. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill 242, introduced by Senator Cunningham, an act relating to school enrollment.
Would you care to explain the bill?
I do. We've been hearing from a number of parents around the state for several years with regard to hardship transportation between the assigned school district and maybe a school that they're a lot closer to in another district, and this is addresses those problems they've been having.
Please read the second bill.
Senate Bill 243, introduced by Senator Cunningham, an act relating to the utilization of resources and services.
Would you care to explain that bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would. A number of our school districts and actually political subdivisions are looking for ways to find less expensive ways to provide services, and this gets rid of the roadblocks to keep them from doing that.
Further introduction of bills? Senator from the 13th.
I have a bill.
Please send it forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 244, introduced by Senator Green, an act relating to the Brain Injury Advisory Council.
Would you care to explain the bill?
No.
Senator from the 1st.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Please send it forward. Please read the bill.
Senate Bill 245, introduced by Senator Lemke, an act relating to the inclusion of chiropractic services in the MoHealthNet program.
Would you care to explain the bill?
Yes, Mr. President. I want to assure you that there's no regulation within this legislation that governs good taste in apparel. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator from the 24th.
I have a bill.
Send it forward, please.
Necessary.
Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 246, introduced by Senators Lamping and Schmidt, an act relating to a tax credit for equity investments in technology-based early-stage Missouri companies.
Further introduction of bills. The presiding officer has a bill that I'd like to present. No explanation is necessary, and Madam Secretary, would you please read the bill?
Senate Bill 247, introduced by Senator Schmidt, an act relating to state funding for elementary and secondary education.
Further introduction of bills. Reports of standing committees. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senate will go to the order of bill. Will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees. I have a report.
Okay. Reports on standing committees, and send that report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Bill 33, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Further reports of standing committees? Senator from Stoddard.
It's always best if you have that microphone already in your hand and then before you call. Mr. President, please refer Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 8 and Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 9 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics. And also, Mr. President, please refer Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 19 and Senate Bill Number 33 to the Committee on Ways and Means and Fiscal Oversight.
Those will so be referred.
Also, Mr. President, have an escort committee for the State of the Judiciary speech today, and like to send that forward. And
yes, would
ask
you send
that? That be read.
Absolutely, send that forward, please. And Madam Secretary, would you please read the names of the escort committee for the State of the Judiciary this afternoon?
Escort Committee, pursuant to House Concurrent Resolution 24, Senators Schmidt, Ridgeway, Chappelle Nadal, Goodman, Schaefer, McKenna, Wright Jones, Justice, and Kevany.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills on perfection, the informal calendar.
Order business on the Senate bills for perfection, Senate Bill 8. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 8 be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a substitute. I'd like to send it forward and move for its adoption.
Senator, you need to move the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute.
I apologize. I move adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute.
Okay.
Now I'd like to send my substitute forward and move for its adoption.
Okay. Senators, move the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 8. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is, I'll speak to the substitute and what it does, and I do anticipate offering an amendment as soon as it's prepared. Floor substitute. I move adoption of the Senate substitute.
It is Senate substitute.
Yeah.
Yes.
Move
the adoption of the Senate substitute. Okay.
Mr. President, I'm sorry. I am just so blinded by the blazer. I am I'm trying
focus,
to concentrate.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll look up at the pretty blue drapes for the rest of my
proceed.
Remarks. Senate Bill 8, through this Senate substitute, attempts to correct some unintended consequences of the workers' compensation reform that was passed in 2005. One of the main thrusts of that legislative reform in 2005 was that we moved from liberal construction of those statutes to strict construction of those statutes. And we did not, as a legislature, address co-employees and their protection from tort liability in that legislation. However, the courts interpreted the strict liability requirement to mean that only employees are immune from tort liability because co-employees are not specified in the remainder of the statute. So this bill does clarify that co-employees of the claimant would not be liable in tort. Except we do keep the something more test, which was the prior law before, which we all intended to keep, which basically says, if I can get to that page, the employee will only be liable in the event they engage in an affirmative negligent act that purposefully and dangerously caused or increased the risk of injury. So if you've got a real bad actor co-employee, we're not going to protect him, but we're going to go back to the previous status quo. The other item of law that case law has applied the strict construction to that we didn't necessarily intend was occupational diseases. Well, we've had a case, Robinson v. Hooker, that has said that occupational disease cases would now be in the civil courts rather than in work comp. I have spent the last 2 or 3 weeks really struggling with where how to come down on this and what the best thing to do is for the people of Missouri, those that want to provide jobs, those that want to do jobs, and trying to come at the most just result within my conscience. And what I have in this substitute is bringing back all occupational disease claimants into workers' comp with the exclusion of those whose occupational diseases are the result of exposure to a toxic chemical substance or material. I understand the House has passed this legislation out of its body, bringing all occupational diseases back into the workers' comp exclusive remedy. So my anticipation is if we do pass the version that's contained within my substitute, this will be a process that we work on compromising through the conference process. My hope would be to keep what we have in this substitute. I do understand there may be a need to somewhat narrow further those occupational diseases that are the result of toxic exposure so that we can get there. But that being said, I do think this will be an ongoing conversation. I ask my colleagues to support this substitute, and I have an amendment which I'd like to send forward.
Senator from Lawrence has an amendment. Please send it forward.
Mr. President, it has not been distributed. I'd ask that it be read. It's very brief.
It shall be read. Secretary, read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1, offered by Senator Goodman to amend Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 8, page 7, section 287.067, line 23 of said page, by inserting immediately after, quote, chemical, close quote, the following, quote, substance or material, close quote, and further amend line 25 of said page by inserting immediately after the word, quote, consumed, close quote, the following, quote, inhaled or absorbed, close quote.
The senator from Lawrence has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 1, the Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 8. Senator, do you care to explain your amendment?
I do, Mr. President. Thank you. This amendment simply corrects one omission from our definition of toxic exposure within the substitute. The substitute just referred to exposure to toxic chemical exposure. This goes on further to include substances or materials that can create the toxic reaction within the body of the claimant, but it doesn't change the intent of the bill. And I'll move for the adoption of the amendment and then ask to speak on the bill again.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Lawrence. Does any senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment 1? The senator from the 5th, for what reason do you seek recognition?
I seek unanimous consent, Mr. President, for introduction of very special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you. In the gallery above us to the rear, we have two groups, men from the 100 Black Men Organization in the city of St. Louis and the Executive Committee of the Missouri Coalition of Minority and Women-Owned Businesses, and they would be Ms. Dorothy Lockhart, Mr. Eddie Davis, Mr. Lonnie Scott, Ms. Janet Poppin, Mr. David Stewart, Mr. Jim Webb, and I would ask the Senate to welcome them. Thank you.
Will the entire Senate make the guests of the Senator from the 5th made to feel welcome here this morning? Senator from
Stoddard.
What county? Stoddard County. For what reason do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Up in the upper gallery, I have with me this morning the superintendent of Dexter Public Schools and his wife, Dr. Tom Sharp and Martha, that are up there, and it's good to see them in Jefferson City, and I'd like for the body to welcome them.
Will the Senate make the guests of the Senator from Stoddard feel welcome here this morning? You've heard the motion from the Senator from Lawrence on Senate Amendment 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Lawrence for the adoption of Senate Amendment 1. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Lawrence.
President, to speak on the substitute.
Proceed.
Thank you. I'd like to talk a little bit about how I came to the position that's contained within this substitute. And it is some deviation from where the law was prior to 2005 in the area of occupational disease. And I struggled with where to go on the toxic exposure occupational disease. And I thought about a lot of things, including, obviously, I don't want to place any more burden, any more regulatory burden, any more fear of frivolous liability, any more expenses through insurance or other possible liabilities on the folks in this state that are taking the risks with their resources to provide jobs for the people that live and work in Missouri. However, I do also think that one of the real and legitimate functions of our system of justice is not only to make recompense to those that have been wronged, but also to provide discouragement to those that would do harm to others in advance. And I think by leaving these toxic exposure occupational diseases in the realm of the civil jurisprudence system, we are more likely to have the appropriate calculation made by those who are really the only ones in the position to make the calculation that may or may not expose their workers to something that could debilitate them or ultimately take their lives. When you have a toxic substance to which your employees may or will be exposed, the only real party in this chain of command from producers and suppliers, or chain of supply, I mean, down to the worker, the only, in many cases, the isolated person or entity that gets to decide the cost-benefit analysis of exposing the workforce to the toxin is the employer. The producer of whatever the toxic substance may be can protect themselves to some degree by putting adequate warnings, adequate instructions, and taking all the appropriate safeguards to exonerate themselves in a product liability situation. But if the employer does not, in a meaningful way, inform, educate the worker about how to be safe with these substances, and then require the employee to comply with those instructions, and then provide the necessary safety equipment, maintain that necessary safety equipment, and be sure that the employee is protected, then that employee can contract the occupational disease and ultimately die. It's rare, I think, that we stand on the floor of this chamber and handle legislation or vote on legislation or deliberate over legislation that very literally may or may not save the lives of a large number of future Missourians. And when I agreed to handle this bill, I didn't really, at that moment that I said yes, comprehend the magnitude of what this bill might do. But as I was going through the process of putting it together, I came to understand that we are defining in a big way that cost-benefit analysis by which future Missouri employers will decide if they are going to protect our citizens and our workers from those exposures, or if in some instances they might decide that workers' comp liability is an expense that they can absorb in the ordinary course of business, and that tips the cost-benefit analysis toward exposing a workforce to a toxin that may kill them. And that is why I came out with the version that I have on the floor today. As I've said, I understand the House is in a different place. This will be, I'm sure, a lengthy conversation between senators and representatives through the conference process, and I hope that we can come to something that is truly the best result for those that want to continue providing jobs while also protecting those that want to do those jobs and raise and love their families. With that, Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Lawrence for the adoption of the Senate substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? The senator from Buchanan, for what reason do you seek recognition?
To inquire of the senator from the 29th.
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
I do yield.
He does proceed.
Thank you for taking my inquiry, Senator.
Of course.
The substitute that you've offered, basically it excludes
toxic exposure. And so anybody who has had such a toxic exposure would then not be covered by the work comp system, but would be covered under the tort system. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And trying to look through the way that you've described that in the paragraph defining what toxic exposure is.
I want to hear your question, but I want to make sure that, would you like a copy of the amendment that did affect that paragraph?
I don't have a copy of it on my desk.
I can send one over to you.
I need to look at that.
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's going to be germane to what you want to ask.
Okay, so basically what your amendment said is that it would include substances that are inhaled or absorbed, correct?
I'm sorry, was your question, will it include inhaled substances?
The effect of your amendment, you made it so that a chemical that was inhaled would also be considered a toxic substance.
If the body reacted appropriately, yes.
Okay, so my question is, what would be the effect on cigarette smoking? How would that fall out under the way that you've written this language? Because it appears to me that, let's just say that there were an employee who worked at, say, a local bar and had been working there for 20 years and was exposed to cigarette smoke, which is a toxic substance and is mutagenic, carcinogenic, and they inhaled it for 20-some years, and then they said, okay, this is an occupational exposure, and I now have lung cancer. Would that then go to the tort system?
Yes,
under
it would.
The language?
Yes.
And is that what your intent would be? Would you want that to go to the tort system, or would you want it to be covered by work comp?
My intent, and let me preface this answer by saying that in my opening remarks, I did commit that I'm going to work on a way to narrow this language to get to truly those occupational toxic exposures that are a kind of concern that I think most of us share. I'm actually comfortable myself with that going to tort because I think in that situation there are defenses that the employer might want to assert that would be there in tort that might not be there in work comp because of, you know, the known nature of I mean, tobacco exposure is just a whole other animal.
Well, you know, tobacco exposure is probably going down in frequency, but in certain places like specifically bars, I could imagine how there are a lot of employers out there that wouldn't want to be subjected to the tort system, and your bill would do that, I think.
Well, what I can tell you, if this is of a concern to you, and as I was going through,
I don't know the true answers.
No, well, I'll give you mine. As I was coming to this distinction between occupational disease as a result of toxic exposure versus other occupational diseases. One of the things that I considered in reaching this distinction was that if you have the repetitive motion occupational disease, or if you have some other physical malady that comes from the thing that you do, I think in many cases the employee can anticipate there is a risk of this happening to me if I do this job. So they sort of, to some extent, assume that risk, and the work comp remedy is adequate. In my mind, as you have presented this scenario, I would think that the worker in the bar or the restaurant fits more within that type of a scenario where they know if I work here, I'm going to be exposed to smoke, and this is just one of the deals that I take on. So as you present the scenario, I think it probably does fit better outside of the toxic exposure, and we can look at some way to narrow that as we go through conference.
It seems to me that if you're a firefighter, if you're a firefighter, you know darn well that you're going to be exposed to smoke.
Well, and actually, there are special provisions for firefighters.
Right, and you've excluded them from this. You've taken them out in the language of your substitute.
Isn't that correct? The firefighter's exposure to smoke is not considered toxic under the definition that you put in there.
They are.
It says you've excluded everything in paragraph, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 or something like that.
Well, they are otherwise specifically included in statute. So if we need an amendment to make sure that their specific inclusion is not undone by this, then we need to visit with research. But the intent is not to undo their specific inclusion that is otherwise contained within the statutes.
Yes. What I specifically, the way that I'm looking at the Senate substitute language, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at page 7.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've done is you've said, you've defined the disease related to toxic exposure, and you said it will not include any injury or disease as described under section 4, 5, 6, or 7. And 6
right.
exempts exposure to smoke by firefighters, essentially, correct?
Well, perhaps Mr. Hogarty, who's sitting behind you.
Well, I mean, that's as I read it.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm sort of speaking through you to the research table. That's what we have to do over here.
Okay.
Do we need...
So if you... I've asked them to draft up an amendment, and I'd like to suggest it to you.
Yeah, if we have an amendment that says, unless otherwise specifically included herein, or somehow taking paragraph 6 and protecting it,
right,
that's
and what
fine.
You're doing is you're saying so... Basically, what you're saying is that if you're exposed to smoke as a firefighter, you're going to be covered under the work comp system and not through the tort system.
Well, right. I did not intend to undo their specific inclusion.
Right. And
so if you want to offer that amendment, I'd be happy to look at it.
And you'd... okay. And so what I'm trying to get at is there's a parallel here. Firefighters know they're going to be exposed to smoke. People who work in bars know they're going to be exposed to smoke. If you're going to exempt one from the going to tort, you really ought to do the other, it, just for consistency. And
well,
that's
I mean,
my
I
thinking
think,
here.
I think the distinction of the firefighter is we all know we need and deeply appreciate the work of firefighters, and without them, you know, our homes burn down. And the only way they can fight the fire is to become exposed to massive amounts of smoke. And that's, I believe, why they're enshrined in this body of statute.
What I'm thinking is I just don't want to expose a whole lot of employers to lawsuits now because of the fact that it used to be common for people to smoke in their places of business. It's just that's not what we want to do. I mean, we've had the tobacco settlement, the issue, you know.
My request, Senator, if I can make a request of you, my request would be that we address today, right now, this firefighter issue and make sure that they remain included and that we can work together as we go through the conference process to address the bar worker.
Well, I was
That's
just going to suggest at the end of line 1 on page 8, the words, or a disease caused by exposure to cigarette smoke. And then that way, you know, it would take care of it. Because you're exempting all of those other things. And so why not exempt a disease caused by exposure to cigarette smoke, and then we'll protect our Missouri employers from the tort system, which I really wouldn't want to, you know, have every trial lawyer in Missouri on my back for that.
So you're saying you want to put that at the end of the last paragraph of...
On line 1 on
paragraph
page
9.
Yes, correct. Paragraph 9 at the very end just say, or a disease caused by exposure to cigarette smoke.
Senator, I'll agree to this. If it makes you more comfortable to put that in at this point, I would like your commitment that we continue working together through the conference process to see if it stays or not.
Absolutely.
All right.
I mean, because I really haven't had time to really think about all the pluses and minuses on this. But before I do that, Senator, I wanted to discuss with you a point that occurred to me, and I'd like you to look at... Page 8.
Page what? I'm sorry.
Page 8. And what you've got there is on lines 6 through 9. Any employee of such employer shall not be liable for any injury or death for which compensation is recoverable under this chapter. And it just occurs to me that there's a thing called criminal negligence. And so I'm not being an attorney. I don't know exactly what effect your language would have if there were an employee that actually was criminally negligent. Well, I don't know how your language would affect that.
If you go down, Senator, to line 11 through 15 in that same paragraph, it says, except that an employee shall not be released from liability for injury or death if the employee engaged in an affirmative negligent act that purposefully and dangerously caused or increased the risk of injury. And, Senator, this, in the realm of co-employee liability, what this bill does is take us back right where we were and right where we thought we were at the time that the 2005 legislation was passed. We did not alter that section of the statute in 2005, but we did alter the strict construction portion. So the judge then looked at existing language that did not specify that co-employees would be included. And the court held then that because they're strictly construing it, co-employees are not specifically listed. They abrogated the old doctrine of keeping the co-employee under the immunity of the employee. And the old case law was the co-employee would have that immunity unless this language down here, which was called the something more test.
So you believe that the way you've written it here, if an employee is truly criminally negligent,
then they are liable.
Then they are liable.
Yes, sir.
And so then there would be a remedy at court.
Yes.
Okay. Well, with your blessing, I'll go ahead and offer my amendment, and then I'll continue to work with you as we go through to give this a little bit more thought.
Does your amendment, just before I sit down, that the firefighters and the cigarettes?
No, it just adds on at the end. It has nothing to do with the exemptions that you've put in. It just adds on, or a disease caused by exposure to cigarettes.
Well, while you do your amendment, I'm going to go ask research if we need to do something for the firefighters. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President.
Motion from the Senator from Lawrence. Does any other senator desire to be heard on the Senate substitute?
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward.
Oh.
Secretary, read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 2, offered by Senator Schaaf to amend Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 8, page 8, section 287.067, line 1, by inserting after the word, quote, section, close quote, the following, quote, are a disease caused by exposure to cigarette smoke, close quote.
Senator, do you care to explain your amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. Basically, the amendment would just simply say that diseases that were caused by exposure to cigarette smoke during the course of employment would be covered under the work comp system and not by the tort system. And that's what it does. And I would move for its adoption.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Buchanan on the amendment. Does any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Stoddard, for what reason do you seek recognition?
To inquire.
Senator, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Excuse me. I've been in and out of the chamber. Would you explain to me once again what your amendment does?
Sure. Basically, under the Senate substitute, which now takes toxic exposure and puts it out of the work comp system and puts it over into the tort system. In doing that, the term toxic exposure was defined to not include injuries or diseases described under four specific subsections of the bill. And one of those is exposure to smoke by firefighters. And what I'm asking to do is to also remove from that exposure to cigarette smoke. And the purpose is that that too, for the very same reason as it smoke exposure by firefighters, should also stay in the work comp system and not be covered in the tort system, else you'll have employers being sued because of their employment of employees that are exposed to cigarette smoke for periods of time.
Okay, now explain that to me a little more detail. You're wanting an employee, let's say, I guess this is where you're going with this. If I work at wherever, and the person that I work next to is a smoker, is that correct? And
let's say that's a reasonable scenario.
Yeah, and so after so many years, I get some type of respiratory illness or problem. You would want to allow me to be able to bring the claim as a tort. Is that correct?
I wouldn't. I would think that I would want not to have it be brought as a tort. I would want it to be under the work comp system.
Okay. Any work-related type of injury or illness, you would want to be placed under the workers' compensation system. Is that correct? That's what you're trying to do with this your amendment.
Right. I would, because see, if a firefighter knows that he or she is going to be exposed to cigarette smoke, smoke from a burning building. And yet they do it, and if that's not considered toxic exposure, that would allow that person to go to tort, but rather be covered under work comp. The same thing should apply to a person who is working and knows that they're constantly being exposed to cigarette smoke. Because ultimately, a person who has like a lung cancer, emphysema, whatever, you know, I don't really think that we want to give them a cause of action under tort to sue their employer.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Now, you, I guess your amendment, was it not distributed? It was read?
I did not distribute it. It was read.
Okay. And where are you putting the language? What is that on page 7?
It's on page 8 at the very end of line 1. And basically, what it would then say is the term toxic exposure would not include all of those other things, and then at the end I just said, or a disease caused by exposure to cigarette smoke. So it would not include, toxic exposure is defined in here, would not include a disease caused by exposure to cigarette smoke.
Okay, and so so it says earlier in that chapter 9, a disease related to toxic exposure shall not be recognized as an occupational disease for the purpose of this chapter. So it would not be brought under a workers' compensation claim.
If you put my words in there, my understanding of it would be that exposure to cigarette smoke would then come under work comp and not under tort. That's my intent, anyway.
If that's your intent, I'm not sure that's what you're getting accomplished by doing what you're doing.
Well, now, Senator, the bill itself.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, term tax exposure. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Senator.
No, the bill. What he's doing is he's saying everything goes under work comp now except for toxic exposure, right?
Exactly.
And then under subsection 9, he says toxic exposure will not be recognized as an occupational disease for the purposes of this chapter, which is taking out toxic exposure. And then he says, but toxic exposure will not include the injuries or diseases as described under these subsections.
Okay, I see it now.
And I'm saying that it also won't include cigarette smoke exposure. That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Buchanan. Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from Boone.
Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from Buchanan?
Do you yield, Senator?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Okay. In follow-up to the senator from Stoddard, I think what we're doing is the senator from the 29th has an exemption from workers' comp, and you're creating an exemption from the exemption.
That's correct.
Right. My question is, by doing that, and I don't practice law in the area of work comp, so I don't know, but I don't know currently if cigarette smoking by a co-employee is a recognized claim under workers' comp. And by putting this language in there, are we in fact creating a new workers' comp claim that does not currently exist? And I don't know the answer to that question, and I don't know that you do. I'm throwing that out there because that occurred to me based on that language, and I just don't know the answer to that.
Well, it seems to me that the way he's reading this, he's created four other exemptions to the exemption. He's creating the exemption in subsection 9 by saying that toxic exposure will not be covered. And so then toxic exposure is...
Right, and I think I understand your point, which is it could be construed that a claim relating to cigarette smoking because of the toxins in cigarette smoke would fall under that exemption. I understand what you're trying to do, which is create an exemption to that exemption. But by doing so, what I'm trying to determine is, are you actually articulating a stated workers' comp claim in the statute that currently doesn't exist?
Well, I don't know, but...
And I don't know either.
The same argument would go the other way, which is that the exemptions to the exemption that he's created might also be doing the same thing.
That's a fair point. I think you're right about that.
So I don't know, but it just seems to me that our desire here isn't to have cigarette smoke exposure, you know, come under the tort system.
I agree with you in that regard, and I see your point. I'm just, unintended consequences, I just want to make sure that what we're not doing is actually articulating a new workers' comp claim that currently doesn't exist, and that would be that it's recognized under the workers' comp law that you can, in fact, file a workers' comp claim with your employer for the smoking of a co-employer. And I don't know. Maybe you can already do that. I don't know. Maybe we have a fellow colleague here who knows the answer to that question. And I can certainly talk to research about that as well.
Okay.
So thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Buchanan. Does any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
You've heard the motion from the Senator Buchanan on Senate Amendment 2. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are back to the Senate committee, or the Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 8. The senator from Lawrence has made that motion. Does any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none. Senator, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. As I close, I would like to clarify to the body, following the discussion with the senator from Buchanan, we did include language protecting the firefighter paragraph, so that is not a concern. And with that, I would renew my motion, Mr. President, for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
The senator from Lawrence has renewed his motion for the adoption of the Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 8. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate substitute has been adopted. The senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that the Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill number 8 be ordered, perfected, and printed.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Lawrence. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Stoddard, for what reason do you seek recognition?
To inquire of the sponsor of the bill.
Senator from Lawrence, you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. It's been a busy morning for me, so this has moved rather rapidly here on the floor. I've got some questions in particular about Chapter 9 on page 7. You've got language that says a disease related to toxic exposure. Can you tell me what kind of standard are you going to be used there when determining that actual disease?
Well, the definition after the, and I don't know if, I'll ask the Sergeant at Arms to bring you a copy of the amendment that was adopted. After the adoption of Senate Amendment number 1, the definition of toxic exposure should be prolonged. Basically, it's exposure to a chemical substance or material that is consumed, inhaled, absorbed into the body and causes death, abnormalities, disease, mutations, cancer, deformities, or reproductive malfunctions. I mean, the definition is contained within that paragraph 9, Senator.
Yes. Now, I think there's language in here like that you had just read that can cause a death. Now, how would this chapter here impact somebody like an auto body shop repair company that, you know, obviously works around lacquer and paints and that sort of thing? How would that impact an employee that works for a company of that type?
I've actually had some of those conversations with folks that are in that specific industry. It affects it in a couple of ways. First of all, I think if you're in tort and you are an employer who has done everything right, you followed all the safety procedures, you've supplied the safety equipment, you've maintained it, you've made sure your employees are well instructed, I think you've got a defense in tort and should, outside of the expense of litigation, which I recognize, should be okay. In work comp, even if you've done everything right, you may still have liability. Additionally, if you are in that industry and you are the last one that employed one of these workers who brings a claim and you employ them for, you know, even a year or less, you would be the one on the hook even if their real problem came from working for years and years and years and years and years for a prior employer, because of the way the rest of this workers' comp statute plays out. So I think that, and I have committed that as we go forward, clearly the House adopted a different position. We will be conferencing, or we'll be in conference on that. And I will look for ways that we can meaningfully perhaps tighten language here for those instances. But I do think, depending on which employer you are in that chain of employment and how good of an actor you've been, when you get to the tort situation, you may have a better outcome, although I recognize there is expense in getting there.
So, in other words, the employer would have to go through court and face a tort claim, which, of course, damages could be much, much greater than what would be received under the workers' comp system. Is that correct?
Potentially.
Now, if there's a disease caused by toxic material, let's say where there was no negligence on the part of any party, has this bill eliminated benefits that would have otherwise taken place in the workers' comp system?
Yeah, I mean, if there's no negligence, there's no products liability situation, there's no bad actor, then in tort, presumably there would not be liability.
Okay, but in those types of instances, we'd still be going through the workers' comp system. I guess we're not, right?
No,
on toxic materials.
You would be in tort.
Okay. All right. Now, tell me how the system now exists or what's presently in law. I thought there was a court ruling or maybe a statute that dealt with instances where companies had dealt with employees somewhat maliciously, so to speak. Is there a provision already in the law that deals with that instance occurring where maybe you had an employee who worked for a company and there was something hidden from them as far as in the workplace, or a danger in working, and it was not revealed to the employee?
If the claimant can prove intent and excuse me, intent and that level of malfeasance, then I think the opportunity for punitive damages exists. That's a tough thing to prove.
So I mean, it does exist. It's more difficult to prove than.
But I think one of the important things about the tort system, as I said earlier, and I recognize that you have many demands on your time and attention. But earlier, I said that one of the reasons that I came down to this version of this substitute, thank you very much, was to make sure we don't have that situation where work comp liability might be factored in as a cost of doing business to those types of employers that would be the bad actor. If they're facing tort liability or potential punitives for knowingly, which they will anyway, but I mean, if that degree of liability would be there, I think that factors into their cost-benefit analysis and can potentially be saving the lives of Missourians in the future. But I again recognize the House did not take this position, and the conversation about this policy will be continuing for several weeks, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm just trying to get a better understanding of how this Chapter 9 specifically will impact businesses, such as a auto body repair shop where you're dealing with some materials that obviously can be harmful to a person's health, or say even a grain elevator where you have employees exposed to quite a bit of dust. And so I guess I need to be more specific in that these employees are aware of the dangers that exist in the workplace. They're aware of them.
The employees?
The employees are aware that they exist, and obviously there's a greater propensity, I guess, to get certain diseases or illnesses from working in these places, but the employees are aware of that. They're being compensated for that. So what kind of impact does Chapter 9 have on employers where you have a situation where, you know, there's some dust and there's some things that just happen through the normal course of doing work or business?
Well, I think when you've got those situations, there are a number of things that would be factored in the courtroom situation. One is, you know, if it's something that everybody knows about, that's going to be considered. If there are known and expected safeguards that are the standard of care that should be provided by the employer to the employee, whether or not that's provided and whether or not the employee then does or does not do what they are supposed to do to protect themselves, all those things are considered in the courtroom as they come to the decision of whether or not there is liability and the degree to which the percentage of liability is allocated. And as I also said earlier, as I was drawing this line between the toxic exposure and the other occupational diseases, one of the things I considered was that with toxic exposure, where there would be a prevailing tort claim most likely, those are going to be cases where, in most cases, the employee didn't know the toxin was, that they were being subjected to the toxic substance. And if they're going to get the award, in most cases, the employer would have known and the employee would not have known. I think that's different than the repetitive motion or some of the other types of occupational diseases where you recognize this is something that if I take this job, I risk this happening to me. And the grain elevator situation, I guess, probably fits there a little better. But again, I think that there are safeguards you can take, and as long as everybody makes sure they're doing their part. And if as we go through the conference process, if we find ways to further narrow the language so that we are really getting at those more isolated, identifiable situations that give rise to these concerns, my mind is open in that endeavor.
I guess my concern is these types of businesses now, will there be, because of pretty crafty attorneys will determine, hey, I can, you know, instead of going through the workers' compensation system and a claimant, I'll take these types of cases in tort. Do you envision that occurring? Will we see a greater amount of tort cases because of a provision of this nature?
You know, most of these cases are taken on a contingent fee. And I don't know how you are in your practice of law. I tend to not take the cases that I don't think I'm going to get paid for. So if there's a claimant that comes in with what looks like it's not going to be a valid case, I mean, these aren't usually hourly cases. In tort, they're still going to have to prove them up on the merits. There are defenses, there are considerations, and these are usually expensive cases to bring. So I'm comfortable with where we are.
Yeah, I understand all that, and I agree with you on all that, that lawyers tend not to take cases that are not good cases and won't pay out on contingency fees. My real issue with this is, do we see these cases going to court in the form of a tort case instead of a workers' compensation case, and leaving businesses and employers open for greater damages even though they've done everything they can to keep the workplace safe?
I think if they've done everything they can and everything they're supposed to do, and the system is working as it is to work, they would, in that case, have no damages, but they would have the cost of litigation.
So now, with this provision, they're going to go through a tort case, and of course, they're going to be have to defend themselves, and there's a really unlimited understanding of what the damages could be if a court finds in favor of an employee, whereas with the workers' compensation system, there's a more well-defined damage award. And
I mean, the punitives are limited. The actual damages are, you know, what actual damages are proven to be, and then they allocate fault and responsibility, and there you go.
So, I mean, you believe that these cases, which have now been going through the workers' compensation system, will now go to court and will be a tort claim, and that's a lot of these cases now have been workers' comp claims, correct?
If they fall within the definition of paragraph 9, yes.
Now, relate to me and some instances, if you could be a little more specific on where you see some injustices occurring in the case of a claimant to, or an employee who's been damaged in the workplace, and workers' comp, I guess you believe that system wouldn't compensate this person fully, and there'd be an injustice. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Well, my concern, as we make policy, is always going forward to prevent the injustices in the future. But I think, as far as an existing example, I do think that the workers' comp system is both an inadequate deterrent and provides an inadequate remedy in cases that cause harm to the extent of a mesothelioma victim. Or we have seen other cases around the state, not in my district, but we may have a senator from one of those districts that may or may not want to weigh in on this, where there are there were some popcorn seasoning.
Yes.
Exposed.
Yes, I think that's a company in Perryville, Missouri.
And I don't know all the specific facts of those cases, but if the employer in that case did not do everything that they should have done, and the damages and the harm to the employees was severe enough, then I think that the work comp system is not an adequate system of remedy.
So in a case such as that, where there was some type of additive put on the popcorn, and I guess it was tended to be a carcinogen and caused cancer later on, what happens right now in a workers' comp case in an instance like that? I mean,
my understanding is if the,
of course, you have to prove up it's a work-related.
Well, you have
cause
much more reduce things to prove than you would if you went to tort. Then if you've got the case of someone who's deceased, I believe it's you take 2/3 of their last weekly wage. They get a $5,000 burial benefit if they prove what they need to prove to make their claim. And the surviving spouse until remarriage would have that weekly benefit of the 2/3. And dependents due till the age of 18 or to 22 at college graduation, unless they are somehow infirm.
So, I mean, what kind of damage award would somebody get in an instance like that? I know it all depends on the amount of money that they make, but obviously, I'm talking about in workers' comp.
Well, Senator,
there's a cap. I know, you know, regardless of how much you make, there's a cap on that. What would be? I mean, do you know what
well,
kind
that was,
of?
I mean, that's the formula. It's just going to depend on what they made, Senator.
And so the crux of what's troubling you is that you feel like that they are not compensated in full, and they need a greater amount of compensation. And I understand that, and I'm not in any way questioning your sincerity or genuineness about the issue. I guess the bottom line is this written tight enough to deal with the instances or incidents that you want to deal with, or is it opening it up a little wider and might be entrapping other businesses or employers that really need to be in the workers' compensation system? That's my concern. I mean, I don't question your sincerity, and I understand your concern about the injustices. My concern is, do we have this written tight enough that we don't ensnare businesses that are really doing things the right way and putting in place all the safety measures and procedures that they need to, and now they're going to be forced to go into the court system and defend themselves and expose themselves to really a great deal of liability?
Well, what I have said repeatedly this morning is that I am committed to working through this conference process to come to a tight definition that accomplishes as best we can putting the protections where we need them without ensnaring any of those other employees that we don't want to create problems for. I do still think that those folks, if they're doing what they need to do, should prevail on the merits and have actually greater defenses in the tort system. But I have repeatedly this morning committed to continue fine-tuning that definition.
Okay. I think I have one more question. Thank you, Mr. President.
We are on the perfecting motion. Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from Buchanan, for what reason do you seek recognition?
To inquire the gentleman from the 25th.
There are no gentlemen, Senator, in the Missouri Senate.
Thank you. To inquire of the senator from the 25th.
The senator from Stoddard, do you yield to the inquiry?
I do.
He yields. Proceed.
Thank you.
He's a pretty big old boy, you know. He came down on that pretty loud.
I was listening to your inquiry, and I just had a technical legal question that I wanted to get your opinion on. And if you look at page 7 on line 23, it defines toxic exposure to mean any prolonged chemical exposure, and it specifically says chemical. And then if you look down on line 28, it says the term toxic exposure shall not include any injury or disease as described under these subsections. And it is included in there subsection 4 and 5, which deal with noise and radiation and are definitely not chemical. And so my question is, and not being an attorney, I want to ask, by including those in there, since they're specifically not chemical, would that then cause somebody to argue that other things that are listed, say, subsection 8 or subsection 3 or subsection 2, which are also not chemical, would then be covered since he's specifically listed them? And
well,
I don't know the answer.
That is a good question. You're talking about on 23, prolonged chemical exposure. So you're asking, you know, would a substance or some other material?
You know, what you're saying is that, you know, this will mean a chemical exposure, but then there's this laundry list of things that it doesn't include. And since it's, say, let's take, for example, noise. Well, noise isn't a chemical exposure, but it's listed as not being, so therefore could somebody make the argument that, say, repetitive injury would be because it's not chemical either, and it isn't listed. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so I don't know the answer, and I'd like to get your opinion.
Well, I mean, a lot of this would be open to interpretation of a judge later on. And did we take out, I haven't had a chance to look, the provision that deals with strict interpretation, or do you know?
I don't know.
I know that has been one of the beefs by some in the legal field, that, you know, it used to be prior to our reform in workers' comp, whenever that took place, that there was a provision in there that talked about it being liberally construed for the employee, and then there was a provision put in there talking about it being strictly construed. And so if that provision's still in there, you know, the court or judge would look at the wording and interpret it very strictly.
Well, so then the question would be, should we take out the 4, 5, and 7, which are noise, radiation, and infection, since they're not chemical exposure? I guess infection sort of is in a way, but for sure noise and radiation aren't. So I just, that's all I wanted to say is pointed that out, and you can think about it.
Okay. And thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
You've heard the perfecting motion from the senator from Lawrence. Does any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Boone, for what reason do you seek recognition?
Inquire the senator from the 29th.
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Good morning, Senator.
Morning, Senator.
All right, Senator, you and I have talked about this a little bit, and I understand what you're doing, and I know that a lot of our colleagues have a lot of questions on that, but basically, if I understand, what the language does is it says, okay, there's a body of potential harm out there that just doesn't fit into the mechanism of workers' comp, in large part because of unforeseen latent, in large part latent. And mesothelioma or asbestosis would be a good example where somebody works somewhere when they're 30 years old, they have no idea that the exposure is doing anything, and then 20, 25 years later, they get something that not only is damaging but is fatal. And so does that fit within the paradigm of a workers' comp system, which would be repetitive motion, you know, and even could include some toxic substances such as, you know, I sprayed this cleaner on a surface, it splashed back, it got in my eye, I've got some eye damage, something like that. But you've got this potential body of harm out there that is somehow different and doesn't fit in. Is that kind of what you're trying to acknowledge with what you're doing?
It is. And I also acknowledge that there's tightening of language to be done as we continue this process working with the House for
right,
the conference.
And you and I have talked about this because the way I see it, it seems to me what you're trying to address, there's two issues in that kind of those things that are different. And one would be the adequacy of the remedy. So in other words, 30 years down the road, you do, you know, you develop mesothelioma and suddenly you're going to die in 10 months. And, you know, is it an adequate remedy to say, well, go into the workers' comp system and get whatever dollars per month? And so the adequacy of the remedy is one issue. The other issue is the culpability of the employer. And in other words, if the employer, because obviously, you know, there are certain things that present a risk, and they're understood risk. But from an employee's perspective, are there some things that are not readily apparent? The harm is latent, so it doesn't occur till later, where you don't know the risk, but maybe the employer knew the risk and either didn't provide the equipment or impart the knowledge to you that risk existed. And so really, those are the two issues that I see from what comes out of this, the adequacy of the remedy, and the second issue is that the appropriate culpability of the employer. And whether or not that's some kind of a articulated recklessness standard, in other words, you know, was the employer so recklessly disregarding the rights of the employee that there should be some level of culpability? And I think that those are the two things, and I appreciate your comment that it's probably going to go to committee anyway, and we're going to work on this. But I would look forward to working with you on that, because I understand your concern, and just as you've said, there could probably be some tightening of the language to get that worked out. So,
and in interest in keeping the process moving through all the channels, we had an opportunity to be up today, and I certainly wanted to take that opportunity. But as the process goes forward, we always fine-tune, and I welcome your participation in that process.
Thank you, Senator.
We are on the perfecting motion from the senator from Lawrence. Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from Newton, for what?
Mr. President, to inquire the senator from the 29th.
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Just for a non-lawyer, Senator, does this legislation you have and language you have, does it open up a new case of toxic tort reform or something that trial lawyers, understanding I'm a small business person, as many in this building are, does this offer another opportunity for trial lawyers to start beating up small business again? Does this open up a new tort reform for toxic things that...
Well, from where we were, up till 2005, these cases would have been in workers' comp. And the courts have interpreted what was done in 2005 to put all occupational diseases in the court system. Today, this legislation would bring everything other than occupational diseases resulting from exposure to a toxic substance back into work comp. The toxic substance exposure is in tort. You know, it's not necessarily a new cause of action, but it's a forum where the employer typically was not. I will say that it affords the opportunity for the employers to assert more defenses than they would have in a work comp situation. And also, if there's a chain of employers and you happen to be the last one, but more than one, like suppose you've got the auto body worker who paints cars and he worked for 25 years at one place and went on and worked in 1 year at another place, that guy that had him working for him for the last year under work comp is going to be on the hook for the whole shebang, even though most of the damage happened with the prior employer. So there are opportunities for defenses to be asserted in tort that don't exist in work comp, but I also understand the employer's desire to avoid the expense of the legal system entirely. But the short answer is yes, some employers will be in torts that prior to 2005 would not have been. What we are doing with this bill is moving most occupational diseases out of court back into work comp where they had been prior to 2005, with the exception of those who are exposed to toxic substances.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
We're on the perfection motion from the Senator from Lawrence. Does any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Mr. President, I renew my motion.
Senator from Lawrence renews his motion that Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 8 be perfected and ordered printed. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have perfected Senate Bill 8. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. I ask you to recognize me for an announcement.
Announcements, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Because we were able to perfect Senate Bill 8 today, there will be no afternoon session. We do have the State of the Judiciary address at 2 p.m. My motion will be to recess until 1:40 p.m. So that we may move to the House together for the address. Thank you.
On the order of business and announcements, are there any other announcements? Hearing none, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate stand in recess until 1:40 p.m. this day.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 23rd. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. To the contrary, no. We are adjourned. Recessed.